action of one man to launch a wholly unjustified and brutal invasion of Iraq. I mean, of Ukraine.
Are you fucking with me?
I am
just disagreeing with you. In America, we have the freedom of speech, the right to disagree.
Any human being, anywhere, is well within his right to do whatever is necessary by any means necessary to protect his life and property, especially in a country where the federal government itself has proven that it is either unable or unwilling to protect the lives and property of those human beings.
54, Pierce.
Jesus said, let your yes be yes and your no, no. Anything more comes from the evil one. Think about that. Even in the words you speak, there is a boundary. You don't need to embellish. You don't need to argue. You don't need to defend.
All right. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. November 9th, 2025, 7:13 a.m. We got our first snowfall last night, at least up here. Did you get any, Brian?
Nope.
Yeah, we got everything's just a touch. Everything's pretty white, all the vehicles and stuff. Sidewalks, probably too warm. But I'm not going to church today. I got to go do my brakes. I noticed it started grinding a couple days ago. So I'm going to get that done before the football starts.
It's good to have brakes, especially in winter.
I was telling Julio before we started recording, I think my truck is so loud that by the time I notice it grinding, it's probably already time for rotors. And that's what I'm trying to avoid, but we'll find out when I get it apart.
Ugh. Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that on my truck. I'm hitting 160,000 miles. It's probably going to be due. It's the Super Duty, but that just makes it more expensive.
Yeah. Yep. And I got to change the oil while I'm down there. So it would have been better if I would have done it before it started snowing, because I don't really want to lay in that shit. But oh well. I brought it on myself. Like I said, I didn't notice the brakes grind until a couple days ago. So I wanted to touch on Genesis 4. Somebody was talking about this at work. I'll read the whole thing. I don't know. And then we could talk about it. So Cain and Abel. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain, saying, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. And again, she bore his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep and Cain a worker of the ground. In the course of the time, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground. And Abel brought the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and his offering. But for Cain and his offering, he had no regard. So Cain was very angry and his face fell. The Lord said to Cain, why are you angry and why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, its desire for you, and you must rule over it. So Cain spoke to his brother Abel. And when they were in the field, Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel, your brother? He said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And the Lord said, what have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. And now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. You shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth. Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is greater than I can bear. Behold, you have driven me today away from the ground, and from your face I shall be hidden. I shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." Then the Lord said to him, "Not so. If anyone kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold." And the Lord put a mark on Cain, lest any who found him should attack him. Then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. When he built a city, he called the name of the city after the name of his son Enoch. To Enoch was born Irad, and Irad fathered Mahujal, and Mahujal fathered Methuselah, and Methuselah fathered Lamech. And Lamech took two wives. The name of one was Ada, and the name of the other Zillah. Ada bore Jabal. He was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all those who play with lyre and pipe. I don't know if I said that right. Lyre?
Yep.
Zillah also bore Tubal-Cain. He was the forger of all instruments of bronze and iron. The sister of Tubal-Cain was Nama. Said Tubal-Cain was the first. I think he was supposedly like the first Freemason or something. Adam and Zillah, hear my voice. You wives of Lamech, listen to what I say. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's is 77-fold. And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son and called his name Seth. For she said, God has appointed for me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him. To Seth also a son was born, and he called his name Enosh. At that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord. So that's it for four. Guys got anything on that?
Well, there's a lot of mystery in there.
Right. There's a lot left out.
Yeah. A lot of detail. Like, who, where is it? Cain knew his wife. Why didn't they see fit to name Cain's wife? Because it leaves this mystery. Well, where'd she come from? Because it didn't say that Adam and Eve had a daughter, you know? So people get all conspiratorial about him sleeping with Eve, his mom.
Well, you can go back to this part here. When God gave him a mark so that no one would kill him, it's like, there was only like four people in the world.
No,
what are they talking about?
But he mentions that he went to the land of Nod. So, I mean, if there's places like that already mapped out, right? There's a land, which would mean it's occupied with humans. That's how I would read that.
Right.
Maybe not. Maybe I'm assuming. But yeah, I think there's a lot going on, right? There's a lot of mystery. There's a lot going on. There's not a lot defined. And people want to fill in all the blanks, but you just kind of have to take it at face value at some level and just agree to not understand. I don't understand, but.
I was listening to a guy. I listen to these biblical / conspiracy podcasts all day long. And so this guy, he reads a lot of like Jewish, like old Jewish, you know, stories. And I can't remember the name of it now, damn it. But that's how he supposedly fills this stuff in. But there's another theory that All right, so you know how like the Satan fell and took one third of the angels with him and all that. So before mankind, God tried this again before that with the angels. And so I don't know what the population was that was in the land of Nod and all that. Some people think that it was like angelic or half angelic or something like that.
I wonder if the Book of Enoch illuminates that at all. Because there it said that God wanted to separate the Nephilim from the humans, and he created lands for them to live. What does that mean? Did God just like construct tent cities, or it doesn't say? I don't know that
Yeah.
it may name them. I don't know. I don't think it did.
And then at the end of four here, it said something about people that lived in tents. He was the
Yeah, which
father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock.
I understood was the that's the origin of Islam, is that bloodline, the tent people, and they were nomads. They were, they didn't have structures. They didn't bolt down their lives, so to speak. They just moved with the seasons. They moved with the weather. I could be wrong on that, but I believe that is true.
All right, so Jacob and Esau, one of the his cousin was what was his name? Ishmael. I thought he was the because when he was forced out, I can't remember the whole story, but when he was forced out, he married into Esau married into Ishmael's family or tribe or whatever. And I thought that was the beginning of, I think Esau somehow had something to do with the beginning of Islam, and Jacob was the beginning of Christianity.
This
Or Judaism, I mean.
the description though that though where is it? The so Jabal was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock. That description is what stood out to me. Those who dwell in tents and have livestock. There's a description of Esau's people that's very, very similar to that, if not identical.
Yeah,
That's why
that's probably, you're
there's a
probably
connection.
right. That's probably the beginning of that. And then it probably, as you get farther into Genesis, it probably, see, right now he's just saying his brother's name was Jabal, but it'll go further on than that. And then it says Zillah also bore Tubal-Cain. He was the forger of all instruments of bronze and iron. All right, we're back. I had to shed some clothes when this heater's kicking, bearing some heat down right on top of me. And it's like a whiteout here, Brian. I was just talking to Julio, man. Them snowflakes are humongous. It's gonna ruin my plans for the day.
You
I
get
was
a lake
telling,
effect?
now it goes east.
Normally, yeah. I heard yesterday the storm front was pushing west though.
Oh, well,
So like
maybe.
Lake
I thought
Michigan,
it always
Chicago was
went
getting hammered.
east.
I thought so too, but they do rotate.
Because now when I lived in the Akron, Cleveland area, we used to get slammed. And then when I moved up here to on the west side of the lake, we've only had like one real rough winter since I moved up here. And that was like 2013. Supposedly this year is supposed to be pretty bad, according to the Farmer's Almanac.
You know, this is the last year that they're printing it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They've been doing it for close to 300 years, and it's about to be dropped.
I don't know much about it. How is that accurate when the weatherman can't even tell you what tomorrow is going to bring?
It's general stuff, you know. It's kind of like when you first hear cicadas in the summertime, it'll be 90 days till the first frost. That's just like a general rule, and it's like within a day or two. It's pretty amazing. If you've never heard that, that's a farmer's almanac bit of wisdom. So there's a lot of that stuff that's just cyclic or runs off of a time schedule that's consistent, you know, and people just aren't aware of it. But the date changes all the time, right? It could have been June 13th last year, and it was July 4th this year or something. You just never know when the cicadas are going to start barking.
Interesting.
But 90 days later will be the first frost. It's handy for planting your garden.
Right. Yeah. All right. So, you guys got anything else on Genesis 4?
Cain
I
had a
sh
freaking short trigger, short fuse.
Right.
Holy shit.
But, like you said, man, they leave so much out that could have built up for years. They make it sound like it was the next day, but it wasn't. At least that's the idea I get from not just from what they've left in the Bible, but from other books that, you know, it wasn't just that one event. It was like a buildup of things.
Right, and we don't know how much time transpired between Adam and Eve getting kicked out of the garden until Cain and Abel were both born, and we don't know how old they were when this occurred. We don't. So another thing that occurred to me while you were reading it was, you know, a lot of modern day believers complain that, or there's a common complaint that, you know, God doesn't interact with us like he used to. It's like, would you rather live like that? Would you rather have God just like chap, you know, no offense, Lord, but you know, jabbering in your ear all the time, like you did good, you did bad. Hey, you know, good podcast, Fox. I'll likely kill you in the morning, you know, kind of the Dread Pirate Roberts thing. I mean, that would have been stressful. That's all I gotta say.
I think it's a lot of it's got to do with. Have you ever heard the theory about the how our pineal gland is becoming calcified from fluoride in the water and some of the other stuff that's in our food? No. I guess so they've done studies and like when people are, I'm not saying that these Julio, you know about this stuff. These creatures that they see on DMT, what are they called?
The machine elves.
Robot elves or something.
Machine elves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying those are actual spiritual beings, but like they've done studies, you know, where they put scanners on people's heads and stuff, and their pineal gland is like super active when they're interacting with these creatures on you know, DMT or any kind of hallucinogen, or I'm
It's
not
most
using the right words here. Not hallucinogen.
psychedelic.
Psychedelic, yeah.
Yeah, the machine elves though is mostly tied to DMT. And
Okay.
the crazy part is people have like they visit the same place.
Yeah,
Like
yeah. It's
it's
weird.
crazy. So I mean, is it a real thing? I mean, they were talking about like that. They're have doing studies where people are intravenously being given DMT for hours at a time, so they're able to stay in that wherever that is, that place, and kind of map it out. And the crazy part is other people take DMT and they do the same thing and they're in the exact same place. So I don't know, do you go to like a different land? I don't know. Does it open up a portal?
Yeah.
Was it Rogan, I think, was talking about that, or someone like Rogan was talking about it, and he was saying that a lot of the stories that people tell, and I'm ignorant of this whole thing, but he was saying a lot of the stories people tell are of these archetype characters, and they right. keep recurring, and people are having the same interactions with a squid or a lion or whatever it is. You know, it's like this, again, these things are persistent across history, you know, archetypes, situations like the hero's journey. It's every story is the hero's journey, basically. You know, Star Wars was written off the hero's journey. You got, you know, the underdog, he's challenged, he has great loss, he finds himself, he's victorious, he comes home with the reward, you know, and that cycle goes through everything. It's like, you know, Homer's Odyssey. You could almost apply it to Jesus in some ways, you know, born dirt poor, you know, grew up, was killed, resurrected, and then achieved his, you know, previous life with God. And which is, it's interesting. It's very, very interesting. We all yeah. are kind of on the same path, and why. And that's, I think that leads down a rabbit hole of, you know, the whole simulation conversation, which I think is very silly, but that's
me. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of cool to talk about it and imagine it, but I don't buy it. You know, it's like, it's almost like if it's a simulation, it's like we have no purpose at that point. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's a bad word, because simulation means it's fake.
Like it's a video game or something.
Or something. It's like, yeah, it's put on. We are just what, so we're just NPTs.
Right.
Or NPCs rather. How does that work? I just think it's a poorly used word to describe what they're trying to describe. It's maybe an enactment, or, you know, if everything's predetermined, if our lives are predestined, if God knows everything, the beginning, the end, and everything in the middle, then there's sort of truth to that, right? It's like, but what's the point? I don't know. Just live your life, man. Be a better human. Don't be a dick. Love your neighbor. You know, be the best human you can.
Just because God knows doesn't mean that we still have free will. He might know what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And why, but that doesn't change anything for us.
You ever watch the show Black Mirror?
Yeah.
Did you see the one? I'm looking for the episode name. It was fairly recent, and this guy created these artificial life forms on this computer. And it's a very, it's an interesting parallel to life.
Is that the video game that he made? Is that
yeah.
the one?
Yeah. And the little creatures lived. It looked like an old, you know,
it looked like 80s type. It wasn't real good graphics. Yeah. Right. I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. But they were alive. Right. And then right. it turns out that they were, alien form, and you know, I don't want to spoiler alert the whole thing, but just interesting, you know, how it kind of plays into that whole story, that this is all just, we're just living out a program, and it's kind of true, you know, we're born, we live, we have to learn all this crap, we get to the end, hopefully we leave a legacy of something, but what's the point, you know? And if you don't have God in your life, there is no point. What a miserable way to live. I can't even imagine.
Right. Do you know where Simon Peter is buried?
In Greece?
I wanted to say Greece. Yeah, I thought it was like Crete.
It's called the Necropolis. It's under the Vatican.
Mm.
I was just reading about it. It's kind of, there's so much under there. It's just, every time I start, if I could go to one place, it would be under the Vatican and look around. But have you ever heard of, what's that?
But they'd never let you out alive.
Oh, you got that right.
I'm looking for Kleenex. I gotta go wipe my nose. Hold on 1 second.
So who's on guard duty down there?
The Swiss Army?
Yeah, but what do they call them? Remember in Raiders of the Lost Ark, the Jesuits, right?
Okay.
And remember the dude was like 100 and some years old or something like that, and his only job was to guard the what's the word I'm thinking of? The Ark of the Covenant. He was guarding that. You don't remember that movie?
Yeah.
Brian, you know what I'm talking about? Raiders of the Lost Ark, when that old man was guarding the Ark of the Covenant in the tomb down there.
He was guarding the Holy Grail.
Okay, there you go, the Holy Grail. I mean, I was just a kid when I watched that, but I don't remember where did they wind up, what country was that, and where did they wind up at?
It was like Turkey or something.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like.
They went in that. I'm struggling with the word I want to use. It wasn't maybe a temple that was carved into a rock face, in kind of a valley, and they walked into the temple and then went through all the knives and everything that always occurs to Indiana Jones, and then they had to cross the bridge that was invisible.
Yeah,
threw the dirt out on it, and then they crossed over, and then the Templar Knight was there.
A lot of stuff took place in Turkey in the Bible. It was, I think, what they call it, Asia Minor or something. In the biblical, like in Romans and Acts, I think. It seems like it changed, the names changed a little bit, but I think it was Asia Minor for the most part. And they identify that as Turkey nowadays.
Yeah, a lot of names change for sure. And that's one of the, you want to start getting into the whole Palestine versus Judea argument, you know, it's like, dudes, it was Judea, you know. And yeah, but then they all left. Well, they left because they were exiled by the Roman emperor, right? They were scattered. The land was changed. The name was changed to Philistia or Palestine, and basically named after their arch enemies, the Philistines, which were Greek. But that land didn't technically exist like that until who was it? Not, I want to say Herodotus, but that's not right. Hadrian, Emperor Hadrian, hated the Jews, right? Tried to wipe them out, threw them all over the place, enslaved them. Anyway, rabbit trail.
I mean, did Rome ever step down? I mean, you've got the Vatican is basically running all the churches still today. I mean, in your viewpoint, Brian, did they ever really secede power?
I can't say that I know a lot about the Catholic Church. I mean, I know some stuff, but I don't know, you know, in-depth history. It would appear, though, that some people have tried to maintain. I mean, their argument would be, in my estimation, would be maintaining the one true church from Jesus's time till now and into the future. Rome played a part of that. Rome, the nation, right? And now you have the country, Roma. How much of that is fictitious? How much of that is, wishful thinking? I don't know. But, as a Protestant, I could care less, frankly, about the Pope. So, I mean,
Right.
what he says or does only makes me shake my head.
For
Just a
some
little
reason, I
bit.
thought you were Catholic. No.
Nope. Good Lord blessed me with Protestant parents.
Well, I had both. My
Oh, wow.
mom was Irish Catholic, and my dad, his dog tag said Protestant. He didn't really go to church that much.
Right. What's the saying? Everybody's a believer on the battlefield?
Right.
Something like that.
I had an
Pick
episode
something.
called There's No Atheists in Foxholes.
There you go. That's it.
Oh, crap. Lisa just turned on the heat. I can smell it.
Just now? Shit, my heat's been on. But I'll tell you, man, that snow is coming down here in the in northeast or northwest Ohio.
I can't. It's just raining down here.
Wow. Oh, that ruins my plans, man. I was supposed to be laying in the driveway this morning after we get done. I don't know what. I mean, I got Carhartts and stuff. I can still do
Never put off till today what you could put off till tomorrow.
it. Speaking of Catholic, I know Julio's Catholic, so I don't want to talk trash here, but one thing that never made sense to me, you go into a Catholic sanctuary, they have Jesus still hanging on the cross. I mean, I understand the sacrifice and all that, but the main idea is that he got off of there. You know what I mean? Our sanctuary just has a cross, but is it like that in every one of them, Julio, or are they different?
I don't know if it's every single one, but I think it is a common thing.
Yeah.
At my church currently, it's Christian, it's not Catholic. It's
Okay.
just a cross.
Right.
But I have seen I saw something online about a Jesus that was, on at a church, arms stretched, and both feet were separate. And some people were taking issue with that. And I didn't really see the thread too much or anything, but someone was saying that it's a depiction of Jesus being resurrected or, like ascending into heaven. Kind of like what you're talking about.
Huh, yeah. I believe.
Alluding more to the resurrection as opposed to the crucifixion. Because the Jesus wasn't even on a cross. He was just, like he was getting pulled up into heaven.
I mean, some translations say they just nailed him to a tree. You never know what it really looked like back then.
I mean, I think there's documentation on Roman torture devices. So cross is a pretty well-known thing. What's funny is just all the argumentation about, well, did he get nailed through the wrist? Was it through the palm of his hand? Was it the tops of his feet? I mean, there's some description in the crucifixion event, but it, I don't know. Did they, some people are saying, like if they nailed him through the palm of his hand, it would rip out. So he had to have his arms tied up. So there's some
Yeah, I've
images
heard
where
through
it's,
the wrist or
yeah.
forearm slash wrist.
The wrist makes the most sense from a structural perspective to me. But it also said when he came back and he showed the disciples his hands, And there was a hole in the palm of his hand. So it's very specific. So
it was mainly Thomas because he didn't believe.
Right.
And he actually wanted to put his finger in his wound, and he let him do that.
Isn't that crazy?
Which is weird. I guess it. They, I think it was to point out all the different types of sin. You know, like so Thomas didn't have faith, right? And then, but he still was forgiven.
To me, I don't. And this is just the way my head works. I don't classify things like that as sin. To me, it's more of a chat. It's a struggle. Is struggling sin? It's like the core of humanity, right? Is we're struggling every day. Struggle. I just struggled to get my ass out of bed. Struggle to remember shit. Struggle. You know. And Thomas, doubting Thomas. Well, you know, modern. Gen Ys and Gen Zers would say Thomas is just a realist, or he's a skeptic. You know, it's like, okay, is that a sin to be skeptical? I mean, I think we're constantly challenged with this crap, right?
Right.
There was when the mayor of New York got elected, this Muslim, and they were having this huge Islamic gathering outside at like Times Square. And this guy was saying, you know, every ear must hear that we worship the one true God, the God of Abraham, the God of Ishmael, the God of Jesus. The guy was like, whoa, hey, you just jumped a shark right there, buddy. You know, Jesus said he was God. So, but if you don't pay attention to that stuff, right, you're distracted or enticed by the story. And so we're constantly called to question what we're hearing. And, you know, like the thing we got in high school at church was this FBI dude shows up and he's talking about counterfeit money. And he's like, how do we tell a counterfeit from a real dollar? And he's like, we spend days, weeks, months handling money, real money, and looking at it and feeling it and understanding how it reacts to things, how it floats, how it, you know, reacts to water, how it looks in light. And he's like, and then, so when a counterfeit touches our fingers, we know immediately this is not real. This is fake. Something's wrong. And he's like, that's what your faith should be like. You should be so well versed in your belief system that when you hear something like that, when you hear the God of Jesus, it just click, you know, that fake detection trips in your brain. You're damn it, what's it called? When your brain detects two unequal things that are being said are equal, cognitive dissonance, you know, that weird, it's kind of like the music note, that wolf interval we were talking about, you know, it's out of sync. And so it vibrates weird. Like when you hear it, you know it. And when you see it, you know it. And when you feel it, you know it.
Who was this guy? You said he came to your high school and he was an FBI agent, but he was also, was this class was about religion or what?
It was at our church. It was, oh, okay. It was specifically, it was just a lesson on identifying fake things. And it was faith related, right? So, but he equated it to counterfeit money. And told his experience.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, when you, again, I'm going to piss off your Mormon listeners, but, you know, when you hear aspects of, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses or any faith system that professes to be Christian and yet has a different set of rules or different language or different, you know, and you're just, your spidey senses trigger, and you know, it behooves us as believers to be cautious and to be skeptical. And this is kind of like that whole thing about Thomas, you know. So in that respect, all of us probably at some level have that going on constantly. We're constantly evaluating things. We're constantly looking at what we're being told, we're constantly, you know, and when it's faith related, again, you know, you're dealing with guys that just went through hell, literally. You know, the Romans are persecuting them, the Sanhedrin's persecuting them, they're following this guy who's claiming to be God, and everybody is freaking the hell out, and then Jesus gets murdered in front of their eyes, and then this dude shows up, and you know, some accounts are that he didn't exactly look the same.
Right.
There was something different about him. Was it angelic-ish? I don't know. You know, angels are a different species. But there was something going on there that was not 100%. But it's like...
Yeah, let's talk about that. Because, so Mary, was Mary the first one? And she didn't recognize him. And then he said, Mary... in a certain way, I guess, and she knew it was him. It's the whole thing is confusing.
It is, and it's, I mean, it's a demonstration of a few things that are important to us as believers. One is that the body, this corporeal thing, is not everything. You know, it's not everything. There is a spirit, and it seems like it was. Was the difference in his corporate entity because it had been dead for 3 days? You know, was it decay? Was it, I don't know, but for him to come back and just re-inhabit that body and reanimate it, I've got to think some things had to change, maybe a little droopy, right. You know?
I mean, like if somebody has, if you go by some of the movies or videos that you see, he comes back, he's lit up like some kind of spiritual entity, but we don't know that. You know, we don't really know. You can go off of what Hollywood shows you and stuff like that, but we don't know what was really going on.
We know what the guard said, you know, but it was like, was that the angelic presence? Was that the spirit of God coming down and, you know, creating this bright, bright light? Was that, you know, Jesus after he was, you know, reborn, so to speak? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. But why, how could, yeah, somebody that just spent, whatever, 12 years with him, you know, not recognize him. And yet he had all the marks, you know, he had the wounds, and he absolutely, there was a acknowledgement of their friendship, their acknowledgement of their relationship. And Thomas still doubted it until he literally physically touched the wounds, and it was just like, bam, you know, brick to the head. So yeah, there's something to that.
And also, when Mary realized it was him, he told her, I forget the word he used, but he basically told her, don't hug me because I haven't been, he hasn't, his father hasn't lifted him up yet, or something like that. I can't remember the exact terminology.
Yeah, it's, you know, the Thomas thing, I'm glad you brought that up. Because, again, to me, I look at, for instance, the Old Testament as this saga of humanity. You know, they're given basically everything they need. The good, you know, especially coming out of Egypt, right? It wasn't fun, but it wasn't slavery, you know? And here they are, and they're bitching and moaning, and, you know, Moses goes up on the mountain. 2 days later, they're doing worships. To, you know, I brought this up before, golden calf, right. And, you know, and it's just this constant struggle of humans to try to figure out what the hell to do. And it's a story of redemption. It's a story of, you know, failure and sin and all that stuff, for sure. But to me, the inclusion of Thomas's doubting is a relief. It's not a ticket out of jail for free, but it's a demonstration that humans struggle with this crap. Not everybody, you don't have all the answers. We don't know everything, you know? And it took Jesus standing there in front of the dude's face for him to realize what was going on. That to me is a beautiful admission that we should give ourselves a little bit of a break, you know, and maybe we give Thomas a little bit of a break. He's just being himself.
Right.
And it comes across in the story that Jesus was kind of frustrated with him a little bit, but I don't think so. I don't think so. I think, again, I think it's just, it's like an emblematic demonstration that we are flawed. You know, we have judgmental issues. We could spend 12 years with this dude and know him like our brother and then not recognize him and doubt that, you know, what he's saying is what is happening. And then, you know, A, it's God, right? B, it's the man you believe is the Lord of Lords. And here you are not sure. And for if he had to do that, if he struggled with that face to face with Jesus, holy crap, you know, we're doing this from 2,000 years away and we have faith and we have, you know, if some dude showed up at our house and said, I'm Jesus, would we believe him? Hell no. It would take something pretty substantial, right? Like, right. Hey, feel my hand.
But now, actually, we're not supposed to believe, because isn't there's going to be a lot of false, according to Revelation now, all this stuff. There's going to be a lot of false prophets coming, claiming to be, I don't know if it says specifically claiming to be Jesus, but that's what it sounds like to me.
And that's kind of my point. So is that a sin? Was that a sin? I'm just kind of picking on that word. I don't mean to, I'm not trying to pick on you, Fox. You had mentioned.
Yeah, I think I misworded that.
No. But that's a common perception, and I'm just saying I don't think it was. I think it was just a reflection of humanity. And in fact, you're right. We're going to have to use that discernment, and we're going to have to be cautious, and we're going to have to be doubting. You know, call me doubting Brian. but yeah, some dude shows up at my door and says, "I'm Jesus." Okay, I'm sorry, but prove it. You know, how does that happen? I think God has a way. You know, but some schmuck looking for money or power or sex or whatever, because that's what they're always looking for, you know, control and having a harem.
Right. Next thing you know, we're all drinking poison Kool-Aid.
Exactly. Exactly. That's a crazy story.
But going back to the cross and all that, you know, all these guys were tortured to death, and except for John, I mean, he wound up on the island there and wrote Revelation, but then Peter was crucified also, but he wanted to be hung upside down because he felt like he didn't deserve to die the same way as Jesus. But they were all killed. And
that the Peter thing, that sounds kind of amazing in a way, but I think you had to be there, you know. I think to live the life that he got to live, being face to face with God in man, you know, in human form. Wow. So to do that, to say, no, I, you know, don't to hang me upside down. I get it.
Right.
I get it. It seems like a martyr, you know, righteous pose to take from this perspective, but I mean, you know, from our time in 2025. But I think if you had been there, if you had lived what you lived and you saw what you saw, I totally get it. That would be so humbling, and on every you know, every aspect. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Yeah. Oh. Well, I did the Three Eye Atlas. That was, you know what I'm talking about?
No.
That's this, I don't know if you call it an asteroid. Some people think it's a craft, but there was fear mongering and all these news stories saying that it was going to hit Earth in November. Now they're saying, a lot of people thought it might be Project Bluebeam, if you know what that is. But now they're saying the closest pass to Earth is going to be in mid-December and you can't even see it with the naked eye. It's just like, this stuff is just getting old, man. It's like fear-mongering. You know, NASA is just a huge money laundering program, and it always has been to me. And none of the stuff that ever they report on, none of it can be proven one way or the other. And then like this 3-eye atlas, it was supposed to hit the Earth possibly, and now you can't. It's so many million miles away that you can't even see it. I don't know. You don't. Obviously, you haven't heard about that yet, so we can talk about that maybe next week.
I mean, there's evidence of shit hitting the Earth, right? I mean, we've got these giant craters. We've got that we're not man-made, clearly. So stuff has happened, you know.
That was long before NASA, though.
No, you know, for sure. I'm just saying it's not outside the realm of possibility that something strikes the Earth. But
oh, no, I'm not saying that.
Yeah, we have the technology to see it and track it in theory. But everything's doomsday. Everything. Right. The climate's doomsday.
I just think that there are certain arms of the government that operate on fear mongering and
oh, for sure.
See, we were between the two podcasts. We were talking about shadow banning, and I was just getting ready to bring something up that would have probably got us hit on this one. But it happened sometime around the end of 2019, 2020. If you're talking about fear mongering and all that, but I'm not going to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something that's unique about 3-Eye Atlas is that it flew past planets that we have like satellites on. You know, like we have satellites in orbit around Jupiter, Saturn, Mars. And not only does NASA have satellites, but other countries, and none of them took a single picture.
Right.
Are they coordinating to withhold that information? I think if China, India, Russia, or anybody would have found something credible or valuable in terms of mineral resources, I think they would have bragged about it by now. But I find it kind of odd that like all these, all the countries that have gone to space, none of them have really captured much information.
Yeah, but then you got, when you talk about coordinating together, now you got to take into account Antarctica. They've got this hush-hush thing going on in Antarctica, and nobody seems to talk about that at all. And we don't know what's there, what's not there. And they've basically just got a treaty or an agreement nobody's allowed to go there. Why? No, you know, but they all agree on it. But we don't know why they agree on it or who was in charge of that, making that agreement, you know.
So ATLAS stands for Asteroid Terrestrial Impact Last Alert System.
It's funny how the 3-eye kind of sounds like a third eye.
Right. 3-eye. Yeah, well, also known as C/2025N1, also known previously as A11PL3Z. Huh. An interstellar comet.
That's actually what I write down, Julio, is 3 EYE, because if I put 3-eye, it looks like 31. Mm-hmm. And I would have it in my notes. I'm like, what the hell is this about? 31.
Three lower.
So I started writing 3-eye.
Designates the third confirmed interstellar object passing through the solar system.
And the way it was moving, that's why a lot of people, it started to sound like it was more of a craft than just an asteroid because of the way that it was moving or whatever. I don't have any of the details, but it's just a weird story, man. And
They're saying it's
like I said,
ice.
We can talk more about it next week.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I hadn't heard about it. I don't watch the news anymore, so
I hear about ignorant. All this stuff on podcasts. Mm. I don't listen to any news. I got a few podcasts that I trust and I listen to. I hear about all this stuff on that. But we can wrap it up if you guys.
I want to know why diesel is over $4 again. Jeez.
Oh.
I just topped up like 10 gallons and it was $50.
Is your truck diesel?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks. It's always higher.
Now, you know, I had a diesel TDI Volkswagen back in 2000. And it was great because diesel was like $1.25 a gallon.
Yeah.
The thing got 50 miles to the gallon. It was fantastic.
I had a little Volkswagen Rabbit diesel back in the late 90s. That thing was, and you know, Volkswagen bodies never rust either. And that thing was just, but then the glow plugs, man. I didn't really know anything about diesels back then. That was right after I got out of the Army. And I'm like, I didn't know you had to plug it in and all that stuff. So like in the wintertime, I'd go out there and it wouldn't start. I had no idea what I was doing.
That's a good car.
Yeah. Live and learn.
Yep. Did you see total random aside from that, this guy Bleepin' Jeep? No, not Bleepin' Jeep. Shit, his name's Nate. I think he was Bleepin' Jeep. Anyway, he took a Volkswagen 1.8 liter turbo diesel and put it in a Jeep. And he beat, in a race in the desert, he beat a Jeep with a Hellcat engine in it.
Wow.
And he's like, the beauty of this engine is you get it up to 1,000 RPM and you've got like 1,500 foot-pounds of torque coming out of this 1.8 liter diesel. And he said, it's all right there. And you just, you just get the tack up to 1,000 and you're done and everything else is done. And he just, I'll show you the video. It's incredible.
Yeah, I believe it. It's like me and Julio have gone over Tesla and stuff on the other podcast, but it's like he raced a Porsche with a Tesla Cybertruck.
Towing.
He beat the Porsche while he was towing a Porsche. It's like,
I saw that.
It's like magic. I don't even understand it. It doesn't make any sense.
What do you mean?
It seems like it came out of nowhere. Like how does he get that kind of torque and power? It's like something got skipped. You know what I mean? Like
it's DC motors though. DC motors have that property that you don't have to, you don't have a torque generation curve. Like you do, like with the gasoline engine, you know, all the numbers they give you, like you know, you bought a muscle car back in the day, you know, 1971 Nova with a Chevy 350 engine, and it would generate 200 horsepower at 5,000 RPMs, right? So you had to, that engine had to be screaming to generate that much horsepower. A DC motor generates all the torque it's ever going to generate from zero. Like you get one RPM, it's got all that torque. You get to 1,000 RPM, it's got all that torque. There is no torque band. It's just there. And so that's the beauty of a DC motor. And then you just have to have a battery, you know, a power supply that can feed it. And that's why those things run at like 600 volts or something. So it's ballsy. It's really, really ballsy. I converted my mill to a DC, to a treadmill motor. And it's the same thing. You know, I can run that thing at 300 RPM and it will not bog down as opposed to the AC motor that has that torque band. You have to get it up, you know, 1200, 2000 RPM for it not to bog.
Well, yeah, you just know more about this than me. You're speaking Greek to me right now. When I said I don't get it, I really meant I don't get it.
Sorry. it's just the magic of DC motors.
Right. It's crazy. All right, guys. Until next week, or we'll see what's going on with the other show, but talk about that later off air.
So, good seeing you guys.
Yeah, good seeing you. Thanks for coming. Good episode.